That's quite an introduction, yeah. Yeah, so I think actually it's gonna be a rather short talk because the story is I might be done in half an hour. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, the story is rather short. Here's even the shorter version. So I'll show you some discuss some of the constraints we have on the collisionality of accretion, hot accretion in a few nearby galactic nuclei. And we have direct constraints that show that we are likely dealing with a weakly collisional regime. That is not necessarily a surprise to anybody, but having these constraints are quite useful. And so if that's true, we may have to worry about conduction, which is the subject of the talk, really. And so if the flow is indeed weakly collisional, I think there is, I mean, that's, I'm more or less convinced of that. Then you have to treat conduction in sort of in a special way, probably in a saturated form. And I'll go through that briefly. Why it is so. And then I'll show you that you can generalize this ADAF solutions, the original ADAF solutions, with including saturated conduction in these solutions. You keep a self-similar scaling because of the saturation of thermal conduction. For a standard conductivity load, you couldn't get self-similarity. And so what happens then is that the flow is hotter, but yet actually, I'll show you too that the free radiative efficiency at a given accretion rate of the flow goes down, the stronger conduction is. That's an interesting non-trivial consequence. And then I'll argue that it will probably also reduce synchrotron emission from the flow, even though the solution I'll show you do not address that directly. So there is more work that will have to be done on this probably. And so, and then I'll have this slide with a number of consequences that conduction may have that I've not addressed in any detail by the work I have done, but I think which may be interesting from Bondi capture to disk evaporation to the relevance of the AGIOS and CDAF scenarios. So that's the story. So I think everybody's familiar with this sort of this image. It's a Chandra image of the galactic center, Sagittarius A star. I don't know if people still believe there is a jet, actually, I'm not sure. But we have clear evidence of hot flow, as far as we can tell, meaning within 1 arcsecond of the position of the radius, there is hot gas there that's probably being captured by the black hole that powers the emission. And so people have been playing this game now in the last few years, really, of doing this sort of decomposition of the emission. So this is M87. Sagittarius A star and M87 are the two best systems to do this, just because of various scalings in the way things work. But when you do this game that I'll describe in 1 second, you think you're able to see the gas being captured by the black hole. So the game is the following. You do a model basically of the, this is an X-ray map, X-ray contours. You do a model of the free emission, from Schrödinger emission from this gas. And then you infer the closest you can on 1 arcsecond scale, the density and temperature of the gas likely to be captured by the black hole. Then from that, you apply standard Bondi theory that tells you that you multiply the density, the sound speed, and that accretion radius you have to calculate, and that gives you a scale for how much mass is being captured by the black hole. And the story in the two cases is that you can, if that's the right way to do it, you deduce a low relative efficiency. That is for Sagittarius A star, I think it's maybe 10 to minus 5 or minus 6. It's very low relative efficiency. So this has been feeding all this idea of hot accretion being relatively inefficient. And there is obviously a lot more to be said about observations and motivations for these hot flows, but I think that's one of the most interesting part of the story. And so then on the theory side, this is a one slide summary of a lot of work that has been done over many years by many people. But people have tried to understand the structure of this of these hot flows. And the story sort of started with this ADAC solutions. I think everybody is familiar with that. Then there was some development again more recently with the AGIOS solution, which basically used the positivity of the Bernoulli constant in the flow to argue that there should be powerful outflow, and then you can modify the solution by putting outflow of matter in the self-similar solution, and that's basically the AGIOS picture. There is also the CDAF pictures, where the existence of an unstable entropy gradient is used to argue for the presence of convection in the flow that will both transport energy and do something to angular momentum transport in the flow, and that modifies the whole structure. And then, a bit on the side of this very simple, self-similar, steady-state studies, there is this, all the work in terms of numerical that's been done. So I'm just citing one work here, but there is obviously much more. I'm not trying to be exhaustive here. That show a dynamical structure that is not really consistent with, I would say, the simple self-similar scaling. And there might be interesting to understand about this, but this is just a very basic summary of what has been discussed in terms of the theory of these flows. And so if you go back, and so the reason why I put this slide is because I'll be addressing mostly this three solution, well, mostly this solution, modifying it, and then commenting on the AGIOS and CDAF solution at the end. So if you go back to this game of inferring the density and temperature, what you can also do is simply calculate the mean free path of the ions in electrons in the fluid, right where they're being captured. I should say that 1 arcsecond is more or less the scale for M87 and Sagittarius A star. 1 arcsecond, given their distance, the size of the black hole and everything, is the scale on which we think the standard accretion radius of Bondi theory is, more or less. So we think we are right at the limit where we can see the gas falling in the potential well. So you can basically calculate the mean free path of ions and electrons in this hot plasma. There is this formula that I took from Kawi and Maki. That's a very simple scaling with temperature in Kelvin and density in centimeter minus 3. And then these are the measurements. So there is Sagittarius A star here, M87, and then there is a few others for which this has been done. You get the density at 1 arcsecond, the temperature at 1 arcsecond. One scale that is also important is what the physical scale of this arcsecond given the distance to the nucleus that's given here. Then you calculate the mean free path and the ratio of the mean free path to the scale of interest in which we're looking is a measure of the collisionality of the gas. The fluid regime applies when you're looking at scales such that L over R is much less than unity, and it's not the case here. This was on one of my slides. Most of my talk is based on long mean free paths and on this idea. There is an obvious caveat here, which is that tangled magnetic fields could reduce effectively mean free paths quite a lot. And I will not worry about that for now, but it's certainly a big, big issue in this business. Then if you assume that the density and temperature measured actually do not change, and you ask what is the mean free path relative to the capture radius, this is what you get in this column here. But basically, at least in Sagittarius A stars, and I would argue in more or less all the other systems, we have direct evidence that we're dealing with a weakly collisional fluid, or I shouldn't say fluid, but gas, at around the capture radius. Another way of saying that is that the mean free paths are typically of order 10 to 4, 10 to 5, or even more Schwarzschild radii. So these are very long mean free paths. If the gas if the gas were to modify its density and temperature according to the scalings of this simple solution, whether you put ADEF, ADEO, CDEF, whatever your preference is, the relative mean free pass, L over R, which is the quantity of interest, will actually increase as R to the minus 3/2 minus P for a given density profile. So it becomes more and more and more collisionless, weakly collisional. So this is all to say that we have a direct constraint that tells us we are dealing with a weakly collisional accretion regime. I don't think that's necessarily a big surprise, but having these constraints actually are quite useful as being not so model dependent. So if the gas is weakly collisional, we have to worry about conduction being very important in the fluid. And in fact, in the weakly collisional regime, you cannot use a standard conduction law based on a gradient times a conduction coefficient, because you get unreasonably large fluxes, conduction fluxes. You have to use a so-called saturated conduction, which basically says the maximum flux you get is the thermal energy content or density of your electrons times their characteristic speed. And people have worried about that in studies of ISM cloud evaporation. So, and then what happens is that the conduction flux is no longer a function of the temperature gradient at all. It loses that property. It's only a function of the direction of that gradient. Obviously, energy has to flow from hot to cold. But it doesn't depend on the magnitude of the gradient as long as you're in the very weakly collisional regime. And so that might be what's happening in this hot flows in this galactic nuclei. I showed you rather a large value of this L of R. So I'm going to assume saturated conduction is the regime of interest here. And then use a simple scaling of Kaori and McKee, which says that the flux, so it's no longer a minus chi gradient T. You just replace it very simply by this formula, 5 rho Cs cubed, where phi s is a parameter for the unity to capture the uncertainty in this flux limitation, actually. This is a regime that's not necessarily very well understood. And that's valid for equal ion and electron temperatures. Now, the fact that it doesn't depend on the gradient of the temperature gradient actually allows you to get a self-similar scaling for that conduction flux, which again you wouldn't get for a Spitzer law. So what I did is pretty simple. I just generalize these ADAF solutions, and I'm just writing down here the equations. So these are the equation of momentum and energy conservation. There is also continuity, which is basically constant m dot. And the only thing that has changed relative to the original equation is that there, this term here, which is minus the divergence of this conduction flux. And there is a 2h here because this is supposed to be height integrated, and this is somewhat ill-defined, but that's basically all there is. Then you look for solution exactly like in the original prescription. You look for self-similar solution with the scaling of the density, radial inflow speed, angular velocity, and sound speed. So this is a very old profile, and a Keplerian rotation. Well, Keplerian scaling for the rotation. And so in the original solution, you get a quartic, a fourth order polynomial, but that's a quartic in CS over VK. So you can solve it analytically. In this case, you have it's not a quartic anymore, so you have to solve it numerically, but that's pretty straightforward. But then what happened is that one of the solutions you get is actually not physical because it has a negative sound speed. So that actually destroys that's unacceptable in terms of conduction in the way it goes. So actually in all this plot I'm showing you here, the next three plots, you have to worry not about the solid line, but the dashed line. And what is shown here is CS over VK. So it's a measure of the temperature in terms of the virial value, or the square root of that, as a function of the strength of this conduction. So at low value, of phi s here, you recover the ADAF solution. And there is specific parameters for the alpha and adiabatic index and advection parameter, but I don't want to get too lost in this. This is just a specific solution. But what happens basically is that as this phi s parameter reaches approaches unity, you know, you basically you heat up the gas. And in fact, at some point, you reach a very hot temperature that is probably not physical. In fact, what happens is that the solutions break down before this supervial temperature. I'll show you. This is not shown in a temperature, in terms of temperature. The inflow speed, so this is the inflow speed in terms of the Keplerian speed, negative, and it becomes more and more negative as conduction is important. So what's happening here really is that you're heating up the flow. You used to have viscous dissipation balanced by radial advection. Now, on top of that, there is this heating by the conduction flux that comes from the inner regions. So it's extra heating. The way the flow adapts its structure is by heating up. There's no choice. But also, as I'll show you in the next slide, it reduces its rotation rate to reduce the rate of viscous dissipation. And it increases its inflow to balance, so the advection balance this extra heating due to conduction.
Are you talking about ion temperature or electron temperature?
This is a one temperature solution.
Oh, one temperature.
Yeah, so there are going to be a number of interesting things to worry about in the two temperature regime. I'll comment on that at the end, yeah. This is the simplest thing you can do at this point, yeah. So here's where really the solution breaks down, actually. It's omega squared becoming negative. The polynomial is solved or you can solve it as forget about it. I just can't find the one word I'm looking for. Horrible. Anyway, you do get solution with omega squared negative. That's possible, but they are obviously not physical. So that's actually in the solution that I've looked at. This is really where the breakdown occurs. It occurs actually here. So I rather low values of this phi is constant. So you don't need much of this conduction to actually destroy the existence of the physical solution. Yes. Yeah, that matters a lot. I'll show you next slide.
Well, gamma is 5/3, it's non-rotating to begin with, the original data.
Yeah, but that changes a little bit. Yeah, I'll show you the dependence with gamma, yeah. That's a good question. But so that I think when what I've seen from now is that this is really where your solution stops. So
I understand if you have a monotonic gas, gamma is 5/3.
Possibly. But yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. That's true. So the what's the right value of gamma in this flow? You would argue is 5/3, and you might be quite right. On the other hand, I'm not sure in a weakly collisional gas if some things could make. Well, I don't know. I don't want to get into that discussion, but certainly I would expect 5/3 to be the relevant value here. Yeah. So this is not 5/3 actually. It's this one is actually much closer to unity.
So gamma is 5/3.
I'll show you in. Okay. Yeah. You'll see how it goes. Yeah. Let's see. Okay. So I don't want to. That's actually how it works. As gamma approaches 5/3, so this is a solution. Okay, I should say, this is everything on the same plot for two gamma values. F equal 1, alpha is 0.2. Solid line is sound speed, again scaled. Dashed line is the omega squared, and then the dotted line is the radial inflow speed. So you have everything there. And so what happened is that as you increase the value of gamma, the breakdown of the solution happens for smaller and smaller values. of the conduction saturation constant or whatever you want to call it, and then you get less of a chance to modify the structure relative to an ADAF. Yeah, so that's the way it goes. Well, it shows you how it goes. Yeah, so I think if you take gamma of, I mean, actually, gamma exactly of 5/3, you get a problem with these solutions.
Yeah,
we
can't get the solution.
Yeah. Well, that's always been the case even with the ADAF standard solution, so yeah.
But what does it mean physically? You can't have gamma 5/3 as an introduction, or what does it mean?
For example, yeah. Well, then people play this game of saying if there is cooling, then the gamma is going to be closer to unity. But I think.
No,
there will be cooling. There is always cooling. A gas is never exactly adiabatic, so it's always cooling, except it's minor effect on the structure, in terms of you don't cool the gas much compared to how much you heat it. But there is always cooling in a real gas. In fact, yeah. I mean that's fine with me. That's always been true of the original ADAF solution as well. So certainly, gamma 5/3 is a problem for this solution. Yeah, there is nothing new there. Oh, that's not a surprise.
Yeah,
I certainly.
Like adding some heating that you can't. I mean, adding some heating that you can't
find
it away.
No, I don't think I'm making it worse in any way. And certainly, my point is that there will be conduction and a lot of it in these flows. They may not have the self-similar scaling as I'm giving here, certainly, but that conduction can affect strongly the structure of the flow. That's basically the conclusion I'm getting from here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'll come back to that, yeah. So you'll have to break self-similarity to answer that question, and I'll come back to that in the two temperature at the end, yeah.
If the conduction is extremely efficient, then doesn't it become isothermal and then it's just
a I would say in a fluid-like regime, that's certainly not the way it works. I'm somewhat unclear exactly how, and maybe it doesn't do anything to, maybe it doesn't make any difference, but I'm somewhat unclear how a very weakly collisional gas would behave. But certainly, you can, gamma 5/3 is very well defined in terms of degrees of freedom of the gas, and you can add conduction in that. That doesn't change the fact that for an adiabatic, transformation, you have this well-defined index, I think. So I would be, if I were to say what you just said, that would be equivalent to say, oh, it's cooling, so I can put in the limit of very strong cooling, it's isothermal, I put gamma of 1, which is really a polytropic sort of way of looking at things, and we know it's not very physical. So I
have actually a problem using the saturated heat flux for very hot temperature regions of the flow, because that is a non-relativistic formula, and it's derived, from a regime where electrons are non-relativistic.
Yes.
And electrons are rules that, dominate the energy transfer.
Yes. So again, that goes back to the two-temperature regime. I'll comment on that. It's not captured by this solution.
There is a region of
standard ADAF beyond 100 to 1,000 Schwarzschild radii where the electrons are not relativistic, and that will work perfectly fine. Then you have to worry about the inner regions, and then you'll have to saturate the saturated formula I've used, yeah, even more. Yes, that is true, but that is not captured by this, when you put everything self-similar, there is no scaling, so there is no scaling for, in terms of the temperature of the electrons, really. You cannot it's not in there. Okay, so if you still believe, okay, so now you heat up the gas, and you increase its inflow velocity. Free emission. So I think this solution will be actually most applicable to what used to be this region, outer regions of ADAF, the way they have been modeled, where emission is mostly free at low density. And so you can ask, relative to the original solution, do you get more or less free emission? Free emission scales at density squared times the square root of the temperature. Here, the density goes down because the inflow speed increases at a given m dot, but the temperature goes up. What's the net effect? The net effect is to reduce free emission. So at a given m dot, you're reducing the free additive efficiency of the flow. And I'm showing you how it goes for the two solutions. This is a gamma of 1.5. This is a gamma of 1.1. So you can, in principle, reduce the free radiative efficiency of this flow significantly. And that's mostly a consequence of increasing the inflow speed. And that's my last slide, so I think I'm like about half an hour. Yeah. Well, but there is more discussion on this slide, I think, because there's various points that were brought in that actually are really part of what's on this slide. So I think, what will happen is that in the inner regions of the flow, you'll have to worry about a two-temperature regime. And usually what happens is that the electron temperature flattens within that region. And so you lose a self-similarity. You still get a virial profile for the ions, but not for the electrons. So you cannot really get consistent cooling in this solution and self-similarity. You have to give up self-similarity. The electrons will become relativists, so you would have to put that in. The electrons, electron and ion fluid would be not so well coupled, so it's not clear whether the conduction from the electron, how much would it affect the ion fluid. There's a number of things you have to worry about. And this general solution that shows that you are heating the flow by conduction, that breaks down because the energy has to come from somewhere. So that was Steve's point. And that again comes from breaking the self-similarity. Self-similarity, you have this perfectly one over virial profile of the temperature. Here, you have to tap this energy from the hotter part of the flow. So effectively, you're cooling the hottest part of the flow. That's what conduction will do for you. And you have a finite reservoir available there. And what's interesting is that in the original ADAF solution, these hottest electrons emit synchrotron emission, which is a very strong power of temperature. I believe I vaguely remember some like seventh power or something. Very high temperature, very high function of temperature. So it might be that you are able actually to cool, to reduce significantly as well the hottest region, hottest electrons, provide this heat basically to the cooler electrons in the outer region of the flow, increase the inflow speed. So you could, in principle, get it both ways. Reduce the free emission and reduce the synchrotron emission. If there is indeed conduction in general in this flow, there are a number of consequences, I think, that will have to be investigated further. One is that in the standard Bondi picture, the rate at which you capture the flow on the black hole is actually a function of the temperature and goes down, is a function of the temperature. And so if you heat up the flow, you can reduce the rate of accretion, captures of gas in the on the black hole. Andrei Gruzinov has shown that with sort of a toy model where he had turbulent heat flows. So he had this turbulent scaling, sort of alpha scaling for the rate of conduction, and it showed that you could get a effective reduction in the rate of Bondi accretion. So now it's possible that just microscopic conduction could do that for you. And that could go a long way in principle in explaining why these galactic nuclei are relatively inefficient. Actually, it would be that they accrete less than we think they accrete. And so conduction could do that for you. There are a number of microscopic, I would say, issues, flow dynamics issues you have to worry about, and Steve has worried about this. I guess I misspelled Elias here. There is issues of the flow stability and dynamics might be dramatically changed in these conditions. You may also have to worry about the viscous stress tensor. If the main pipettes are very long, you could have, in principle, microscopic viscous stresses, so whatever you want to call it, if it's a Baginski viscosity, that might compete with actually the turbulent stresses. In principle, it could become very large in some part of the flow, so that might be important as well. A comment about Aegeus and CDF scenario. The Bernoulli constant that was invoked to get these outflows in the Aegeus, it's valid only for adiabatic. Well, it's a quantity that is well defined for adiabatic flows. If conduction is important on all scales here, it's not clear that the Bernoulli constant has any meaning for these hot accretion flows. So the motivation there is not entirely clear. Similarly, if conduction is strong and you have very long mean free path, then you don't expect any convection in this flow. Any displaced element would, reach in principle thermal equilibrium with its environment, and there would be no need for the motion would be neutralized by this thermal equilibrium. And it's also possible that if you put a thin disk embedded in one of these hot flows, that conduction could heat up the disk significantly. So if you do a simple scaling of the rho CS cube, which is this flux you get in the hot flow, and you assume that's actually absorbed by the disk, you find that it's quite comparable to the amount of energy viscously dissipated in a thin disk per unit surface at the same accretion rate. So energetically, conduction could also do something to any disk there, and that might be a solution for this idea of evaporation, maybe. Also, I think it's not clear at all whether it's going to work in detail. Certainly, energetically, it might be important. And that's it. End of my story.
Questions?
So, is it really clear that brigade efficiency is reduced in this way? Because what I'm worrying about is that you're cooling the inner part of the flow, so it should be collapsing in energy, becoming less extended. And so then the density,
we will have to see with detailed calculation. I think the thing that comes out that's not trivial here is that you heat up and still you reduce the relative efficiency, and that is shown explicitly by the solution. I think that's a major. The one interest of this derived solution is that you get a non-trivial result. Whether it's also true for that it reduces synchrotron emission, you'll have to do a calculation beyond this. So certainly, you have to tap the energy from the hottest electron. So, it's not new energy. It's the same viscously dissipated energy, and there is also some adiabatic compression in principle. But you're taking it from one part of the flow and giving it to another part of the flow. That's really what's going on here.
Any other questions? Corey?
Yeah, could you expand a bit more on the, you mentioned something about the bonding accretion with conduction. I'm not quite sure what happens there. The thing I remember is you get the transcritical, the supersonic accretion flow for any value of gamma less than or equal to 5 thirds.
Yeah,
if you have gamma equals 5 thirds and you put in this conduction effect, what happens?
Well, I don't know. I haven't calculated anything.
Irrelevant. Well, that's
different.
Yeah, but
the body
flow is.
Gordon,
this is asking strictly
a
mathematical question.
You said that the accretion rate was lower, but is it by orders of magnitude?
Well, if you look, I'm not entirely clear about this point, but certainly there is this. Andrei Gruzinov has written this solution, and there's an explicit, actually, it's somewhat obscure. But he shows that with this flux coming from in to out, and it's a turbulent prescription, you do reduce, and he claims by a lot, actually, if you look at this paper. So that's the way it goes in that case. And my claim is only that I don't have to invoke this turbulent heat flow. Microscopically, the flow will do that. It will transport heat from the inner region to the outer region. So that could help in that sense. And whether it works by how much, I think it will be a matter of, again, making a detailed. It's a matter of generalizing Bondi with conduction. And it's not trivial. No, it hasn't been done as far. It has been done?
Yeah, I mean, I had it basically an evaporative wind solution in my thesis, which you just turn around and make.
Okay.
I don't know if that was the first.
Okay.
But the whole critical point dynamics changes when you have thermal conduction. It's not like the adiabatic, it's like an isothermal sound speed, which puts farther out in the flow.
Yeah.
It could, if it's high enough. It could. It's a quantitative question.
I have a question about what's happening microscopically. So if the electron heat flux is limited by some sort of things that are and then you have these high frequency waves in the
whistler wave effect with this electron.
Say
what? The electron you're talking about. Whistler wave, not on.
Yes, but he's neglected the magnetic field.
So you mean you want to limit it below the value I adopted?
Well, that's what the Clarence and Bess is for.
Yeah, because in fact, Curry and Mackey have this discussion of this electric field you create if you have, you know. So that's related to the ion.
Okay, so I mean, there's always, there's always a current in flux that goes with the heat flux.
Right.
Means that you're limiting the heat flux below the convective value by sometimes microscopic fluctuations or something like the electron.
No, actually that's not the phi s really is to capture uncertainty, well, a number of things, and I may include what you want, but really the way this 5 rho CS cube is calculated, it's really NEKT electron times characteristic speed of the electron.
Right, right. So
and that turns into in a 5 rho because there is this mass ratio of the ion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yes.
It's
yeah.
Like the electron moving at external speed.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Okay. But then the heat flux could be lower because there could be some things going.
Okay, yeah.
So my question is what role is the excitation and dampening of these microscopic fluctuations plays?
Yeah, I mean, it's Elliot gave a long talk on sort of precisely that question a couple weeks ago, which you obviously kind of missed. The state of the art is only somewhat better now than it was 30 years ago. There is actually a possibility that people can start to simulate from first principles, or from nearly first principles. From Russell Colger in 1983, you could call that first principle, sort of moment equations of the Vlasov, moments of the Vlasov equation, that people can start to simulate these things with some degree of reliability beyond hand waving. When you look at, when you apply this stuff to the solar wind, naive models work well by not too different from unity. This is not complicated.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. In other words, at the moment, we have no good reason to believe that doing something, naive along this sort of Kelly to keep it. They just put an electron in there, put it inside of the moon, and calculated what the heat flux would be against the surface, and that was their 5 rho CQ. Threw in a factor of 5 to that, because it's collected itself. You turn currents so that you don't build up charge,
right,
et cetera, and let it rip. And I don't know that theory has advanced substantially beyond that, since 1977, except to the extent that it's possible to actually
simulate
simulations.
Yeah. But so this is pointing to the potential I wouldn't say irrelevant, but the idea that you might really have to worry about the weakly collisional dynamics as opposed to MHD. Also, I guess you can always do conduction in MHD and try to capture that part. Yeah.
Say something.
No, I don't have a question.
Oh. Well, say what you want to say.
I believe ignoring MHD is absolutely. I'm trying to get the way around. I believe including MHD is absolutely critical for the basic qualitative understanding
for what's going on. Including MHD.
Putting in non-isotropic
conduction. Oh, okay, that's what you mean, yeah.
Changes everything, even in the saturated regime. Back on your last slide, where you had the word conduction neutralizes convection,
mm-hmm.
cross out neutralizes, put activates, and then that would be more correct.
Well, it certainly doesn't in terms of isotropically, that's what I'm referring to. You know
no,
that.
That's my point. My
yeah,
point.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Changes the fundamental dynamics so profoundly that I'm not sure what you can take away from.
Okay, well, that's interesting, certainly, yeah.
My question is very naive. At some point, you mentioned that the mean free path might be 10 to the 4, 10 to the 5 Schwarzschild radii. So I was trying to think of, so on scales smaller than that, or at least on scales where the mean free path is comparable to the orbital radius of the particle at that position.
Mm-hmm.
And at what point is the orbital dynamic, at what point does it change from being orbital dynamics to collisionless plasmas? Because do the electrons, you know, orbit 100 times before they collide with something? I mean, they're not able to move 10 to the 4 Schwarzschild radii if they're bound in bound orbits. And so does this fundamentally, in a weakly collision plasma, which is orbit, you know, which is bound, I'm trying to understand the particle motions.
Right.
Does the orbital dynamics come into play when you calculate conductivities when particle mean free paths are larger than the orbital radius of the particle? It should, because the electrons simply can't get hundreds of Schwarzschild radii because they're bound.
Well, I mean, this is, I hate to bring up fusion plasmas again,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, in particle fusion plasmas, there's
yeah.
a difference between you have the particles, the same particles, kind of moving around and around.
Right.
And,
right. So gravity is acting like a magnetic field. And
well, yeah, I think that.
Moving around the central object, and they simply can't get away.
Because long-term correlation.
That's right. That, indeed, you would. Yeah. So. I mean,
yeah, I think maybe one analogy that may be useful is the totally collisionless gravitational systems, where and what sort of orbits you get when they are rotationally supported versus non-rotationally supported. That might give you an indication of what you're talking about. But so I'm not sure I have a good answer to give at this point. Yeah. Basically, it's free streaming. That's basically free streaming. And that's what you would get if there is. Yeah, I think. Well, you can get. No, no, but the point is that you have a mean motion. You have a mean motion that's omega k, and you have a lot of radial, radius. That's what it is.
So there is a problem. If you take the model kind of on its at face value, if you're at some point in the flow and you have this very long mean free path, well, then you're assuming that the heat flux is rho c cubed, well, which c? Well, it's c at the point of flow when you're sitting here.
Yeah, that's true.
Electrons coming over here with a huge mean free path at temperature. So at some point.
Well, that's a problem of doing your averages for the fluid. I agree.
What I did in my thesis when I was doing this was essentially to pretend like the
another electron to like a cosmic ray population, so that it had a pulse of heating rather than sort of some kind of a diffusive form.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another way
right.
to approach it. So it's a little dicey to use. I mean, Karen and he were sort of really on the careful to say that the saturated form was okay when the input adds and the characteristics. Scale, you know, flow of the scale were comparable, but once the input path got much, much larger.
Yeah.
Then
well, I think that's still an open question. You know, it could be that you do limit the scale to the local radius, depending on what the field does. I think that's, I'm not saying I know what's going on in there, you know. Certainly you could keep L over R for the unity everywhere in the flow. That's quite possible. And then,
there is actually a lot of really observed on this in laser heat plasma experiments, where since early 80s, French group actually introduced this so-called non-local heat conductivity. So there's a kernel that basically it works like this, so that if you're, you know, to calculate the heat flux here, what you do is you look at the classical heat flux everywhere, and then there is a kernel which will convolve this heat flux everywhere, and basically you sample the heat flux from distances of the order of the mean free path of a particle, you know, there, not in your local position. So this is just what you know the point you brought up, so that if the temperature there is sufficiently high so that the electrons will make it to this point, then it's included in this.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, literally hundreds of papers on that in the literature. I tried actually to do something to you. And, well, maybe I'm just stupid, but it's impossible to. I mean, I think the only thing you can do is something numerical, because it's an integral problem. The equation becomes not differential, but integral differential. There's just no way to solve it numerically. So, and numerically, it's also a nightmare because you have to resolve, you know, the transition. Layers and temperature, where the mean free path, if you are in pressure balance, changes as temperature to the power is green, right? So you know, it can be 12 orders of magnitude or something. So you need AMR to do that problem. I'm not aware of, you know.
That's a hard problem to do, right?
It's, yeah. So there is a better, you know, approach than the situated heat flux, but in practical terms, if you need to get a solution. Okay.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you, Christine.